The state of Michigan used to be rich in wetlands. The receding glaciers that carved out the Great Lakes also left smaller depressions across the landscape, which would fill in with water and become important habitats for all kinds of birds, amphibians, and other animals. But after Europeans began to colonize the region, those areas were drained for agriculture or development. Today we learned about a program that's helping private landowners here in Michigan restore some of that habitat. Current State's April Van Buren is here to tell us more about the Partners for Fish and Wildlife program. Hi, April.
Hi, Mark. So the Partners for Fish and Wildlife program is run through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and it first started here in Michigan in the late 1980s. So basically, if a property owner is interested in improving their hunting for deers or ducks, or maybe like you, they're a birder who maybe wants to attract some migratory birds to their property.
Okay.
They'll call up the Fish and Wildlife Service to come out and help them restore a wetland on their property to attract some of those animals. To see how they do this and to learn more about Michigan wetlands, I went with two of the people who helped facilitate the program for the state. Rob Zebiak is the Wetland Restoration Coordinator for the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, and Jim Hazelman is a biologist with the Partners Program. We started on a property about 4 miles outside of Lansing, where Jim and Rob showed me a wetland that the Partners Program restored in 2005.
As we make our way through a field of tall, dry grass, we start to hear birds calling to each other up ahead. On a sunny spring day, this seems to be the place where all of Lansing's winged residents have come to hang out.
Right there. That's a sandhill.
Before this field was turned over to agriculture, Jim says it would have been something called a seasonal wetland.
What that means is you'll have some permanent water, but some years it may dry up completely. And those are the ones that were drainable. Those are the ones that we've lost the most of, because a wetland can be, you know, as few as 2 weeks a year to permanent wetland, permanent water year round.
To turn a field like this from soggy marsh to productive agricultural land, farmers would use something called a tile.
A lot of these fields, to be able to farm them, they would put in drainage tile, which are pipes buried in the ground. They're usually below plow lines. What we had here was clay tile. And those tiles will basically drain the water away.
But even before tiles, people were draining wetlands to make way for farms. After Europeans began to settle in Michigan, the demand for agricultural land grew. And there happened to be some very rich soil sitting under a few feet of water in those wetlands. So, Rob Zebiak says, around the 1830s, farmers began draining off the water to make way for their crops.
At that time, Michigan was estimated to contain about 11 million acres of wetlands. Today, roughly, we believe we have about 5 million. So we've lost somewhere in the 45 to 50% range, but that varies across the state. In the Upper Peninsula, we've only lost about 10% of our historic wetlands. In the northern part of the Lower Peninsula, we've lost about 15 to 20%. But in the southern half of the Lower Peninsula, where we are today, we've lost about 66, 67%, so about two-thirds of our historic wetlands.
And farmers weren't the only ones claiming wetlands for other uses. In urbanized areas like southeast Michigan, widespread development meant even bigger wetland losses. But the state has been working for several decades to restore some of that 11 million acres. And since most of the land in Michigan is privately owned, the Partners Program, which started in the late 1980s, focuses on convincing those landowners of the value of having a wetland around. For some, it's the deer, turkey, and ducks that the wetlands attract to their hunting grounds. For others, it's a chance to see migratory birds or rare species of snakes and turtles wandering around their property. Once a landowner says to Jim, "I want a wetland," his first task is to locate that drainage tile.
And then we bring out, in this case, a backhoe or a backhoe here, and you dig a trench, find the tile, we break it. We'll put a fixed pipe on it to set the height so it maintains in that wetland area so it's not flooding off property.
And from there, it's a little like the instructions you might find on the back of a Chia Pet box.
We like add water, stir. It'll first come back and be open, mostly open water, but then as the wetland ages, it'll go through a successional process, and it'll go from annual plants like smartweeds, millets, that are food plants, to more cover type vegetation like cattails. And each stage of a wetland's aging process provides for different wildlife.
Rob Zebiak says it's important to remember that wetlands do a lot more than just provide wildlife habitat. They do humans a lot of good, too. During large rainstorms, wetlands can hold on to water that runs off of fields or parking lots. They can also hold on to the soil particles that get swept away in that water.
So if that soil particle makes its way to the creek, so does that phosphorus and nitrogen. Phosphorus is responsible for a lot of the aquatic weed problems that we have. So again, when you have that wetland sitting there between the field and the stream, that water is going to run into the wetland. Those soil particles then they're heavier, so they'll settle out and settle to the bottom of the wetland. And then when the water does leave the wetland, whether it's percolating down through the ground or it makes its way through a surface feature, when the water hits that creek, it's considerably cleaner than when it got into that wetland. So that wetland is doing a major water quality benefit.
This particular wetland has been restored for about 10 years now, and the land around it has also been built up with various kinds of prairie grasses, providing another small haven of habitat for creatures to nest and raise their young.
So this is like your Timothy alfalfa, what cows would eat, horses would eat. It's a pasture grass. But in this case, the landowner is big into deer, so this is your, you know, browse grass. But then we like this grass. You know, the taller, what you see here, it's last year's growth. But the difference is, this is like your lawn. It's thick, like you were struggling to walk through it. It has how thick it is. Well, think of yourself as a pheasant, a young bird trying to get through this. You can't. Where if you go up to the, we'll walk up here to the prairie grass. And the difference is, this is a sod-forming grass. And these are clump grasses. And literally, they're clumps. So,
yeah, they look kind of like little bird's nest all over.
Exactly. Birds will use this, but see how it's thinner around it? So now think of yourself as a young bird. I can have this clump. I can hide in it. I can nest in it. But now I can easily walk through if you're a little chick.
To show me what this wetland might have looked like in the before picture, Jim and Rob take me to another spot a few miles away. We walk through a dry field and into a forest that will both become wetland habitats after the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service finishes their restoration this summer.
There's natural wooded wetlands in here, which we're going to go see. But basically, in the spring, those wetlands would fill up, and then that water just sits. Those vernal pools are very valuable for frogs, salamanders, snakes. Wood ducks will use them. So a lot of species, and they normally dry up. But what the ditch does is speed up the process of it drying up. So that water can't stay up as high as it should be, so it may not be as wet as longer. So what we hope to do here is we're going to plug off right where these flags are. We're going to build basically a plug, take that culvert out, and put in another structure, and then set the water, restore the water to what we think it was like before.
This buttonbush swamp is one of a long list of different kinds of wetlands in Michigan, and each one of them provides for a different host of unique plants and animals. Rob Zebiak says some habitats, like the rare fin wetland, contain a large percentage of the state's rarest species.
Simply because those wetland plant communities are kind of specific to those unusual type wetlands, and those wetlands are rare, and so between those two combinations, there are just not very many of them out there.
In 10 years, Jim hopes that the forest and field we've walked through today will be home to some of those animals. But he says that's not the only measure of success he cares about when it comes to these projects. It also matters what the landowners think of their new wetland.
We try to design all of our projects to not only meet the biological, the wetland needs that we're trying to restore, but also that landowner. Because they're our voice. They're our voice out there. We don't advertise our program. They're the one telling it to the neighbor or showing it to the neighbor. They're the ones that are going to say, hey, I want to see like neighbor Joe did.
So far, through the Partners Program and other restoration initiatives, Michigan has restored around 1% of its lost wetlands. The budget for these kinds of programs isn't very big. Jim says they spend a few $100,000 on the program every year. But he says these projects give you a lot of bang for your buck. Restoring habitat on as little as a quarter of an acre of land can help wildlife move through a landscape that humans have disrupted.
For a critter, again, because of us and people, we're going to have our agriculture, we're going to have our houses, our cities, and all that. So what we're trying to provide in smaller areas, these little oases, you want to have water, We want to have cover, which the wetland provides, and then we at the uplands, we're going to have forest ground, we're going to have grasslands, and again, all of different types. So we're trying to provide as many different species and different habitat types in these smaller oases or patchworks. And that's what we're going to have in our society, because we're not going to get all of it back. And our goal with the Partners Program and a lot of the other conservation programs is to build these corridors.
By creating diverse ecosystems throughout the landscape, Jim says even the tiniest of wetlands can make a big difference.
Yeah, it can be a puddle. It can be a puddle, you know, 20 square feet. If it has water long enough, there may be a frog, an insect, or someone that it's gonna, a critter that's going to find value in that.
For Current State, this is April Van Buren.
This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.